We gather because, like the Magi of old, we have been invited to come and worship before the Lord. We perhaps have not seen the star, a sign in the heavens like they did. Perhaps that wasn't our inspiration to come. But for whatever reason, we have gathered here. We have been drawn to the Lord. We have opened our hearts in some small measure to allow the Lord to be with us. The invitation, of course, is for us to be like the Magi, that they were those equivalent of astronomers or scientists, astrologers. We're not quite sure who they were. By the first century, the word Magi or Magoi had become very general in its usage. It was no longer as specific as it once was in application of those scientists and the wise ones in the kingdom of Babylon, which is the place that most likely they've come from, traveling from the east. They would have been traveling for some time. It's about 1,300 kilometers along the major trade route from Babylon to Jerusalem. So if they had traveled with the retinue that they most likely would have been traveling with, it would have taken them perhaps 40 or 50 days to get to Jerusalem. So they've been able to ponder. They've been able to check their bearings. They've been able to continue to anticipate what it is that this miraculous sign is leading them to. And that's the first clue that perhaps we can take from the visit of the Magi, that they were looking, they were seeking, they were scanning the skies for signs. They weren't content just to stay where they were. They knew that truth often lays outside of their usual experience, and they were prepared to travel at some cost, some considerable cost to them. They were prepared to travel, to go to find the meaning of this sign. And they did indeed stop along the way. They did indeed go to seek the counsel of the leaders of Jerusalem. It wasn't their faith. It wasn't their religion. They didn't probably know all of the prophecies, all of the readings, all of the texts that they needed to. And so they went to seek counsel. They went to find their inspiration, so they thought, in the King of the Jews. But of course, we discovered last week that the king was not the way and in the line of King David. He wasn't a shepherd after God's own heart. He didn't lead and encourage and nurture and protect his people the way that a true king of Israel was meant to do. And so when they announced that they were coming to seek the newborn king in Jerusalem, this would have, of course, put great fear and trembling in the heart of Herod, a man already fragile, a man already petrified of so many things, including members of his own family, that he'd even killed his wife and several of his sons because he was afraid that they were a threat, afraid that they were plotting to take over his power. And so the Magi continue to seek. Even though there are barriers that are put in their way, they continue to go to follow their heart's desire. They continue to go after this sign. And when they arrive in Bethlehem, when they arrive at the house that Joseph and Mary are now staying in, when they go to that place, they immediately, again, even though it's not their tradition, not their custom, but they worship. They're called to bring their hearts and their lives and lay it down before the Lord. They recognize something of this little child, something of his divine presence. And we see that, in a sense, in the three gifts that they bear. Gold, because that's suitable for a king. Incense, because you use incense in the worship of God. And so they recognize something of the very divinity of this child, that he's not an ordinary human, that there's something different, something special, something worthy of this offering of incense. But they also offer the myrrh, because this child will give himself and will sacrifice himself and offer himself in a way that no one else has ever done in human history. And so these three gifts represent something of their own devotion to this child, their own answer to their deepest prayers, their own answer to their longing, to their seeking, to the way that they have been exploring and finding an answer. And they offer this gold to the king, the incense, the frankincense, because it's an act of worship, and the myrrh, because they know that this child will one day die, that one day he will need to be embalmed, that one day his body will need to be smothered in these sweet-smelling perfumes to cover up the decay of the human flesh. That all of these are signs of what the Magi are about. And this invitation is also for us to do exactly the same, to continue to seek him, to continue to search for signs of his presence, and like the Magi, to go out of our way, to go against any barrier, to go against anything that is placed in our way, to continue to seek him, to continue to offer our lives to him, and to seek that incredible gift to worship. The last line in the Gospel of Matthew offers us another sign, and as Archbishop Fulton Sheen says, when it tells us that they went back by another way because they've been warned not to go back to Herod, they realized, Fulton Sheen says, that in encountering Jesus, in encountering the Christ, they're changed. Like any of us will be changed if we go to be with the Lord. And we can't go back the same way. We can never go back. We always have to go back by a different way because of that encounter with the Lord. The invitation that we have in this feast as people of the light, as bearers of that mystery of the light of Christ, is to come and worship, to come and give our hearts and our lives to the Lord, and to be changed by that encounter, and to go back to our families, to go back to our friends, changed, being bearers of that incredible gift of light and worship.